Live and Lansing with Michael Cohen. This is More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Hey, this is 1320 WILS. I'm Michael Cohen. It's Monday evening. Thank you for joining us. Okay, cohabitation. You know, it seems like everyone's doing it nowadays, and why not? Don't you want to get to know the person you may marry one day a little better by living with them? Well, the answer may be no. And to talk about why, I'm joined by Dr. Meg Jay. She's a clinical psychologist at the University of Virginia. She writes about it in the New York Times. You can find her piece now at nytimes.com. Also the author of the book, The Defining Decade, Why Your 20s Matter and How to Make the Most of Them Now. Dr. Jay, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You know, I wish you had written this book 20 years ago. I might have benefited from it.
Well, that's a nice thing to say. I hear that a lot, actually. I take that as a compliment.
So let's begin with the idea of cohabitation. It's much more common now than it ever was in the past. What's wrong with living with someone that you may one day want to marry?
Nothing is necessarily wrong with it, but we do know there are certain risks involved. Some couples who cohabitate are more likely to suffer from poor relationship outcomes and even relationship disillusion and divorce than others. There are certain risk factors that I think young adults or adults of any age should know about.
Okay, so let's begin. Let's say you've decided to move in with somebody. What should you be looking out for to indicate
what
that
are
it's
the risks?
Yeah.
Right. We do know that the specific risk factors that make cohabitors more likely to wind up unhappy in their relationships or even divorced are serial cohabitors, so people who've lived with more than one person, because this suggests that they may not take the commitment very seriously. It may be something that they do out of convenience. Also, couples where one person is more committed than the other, this leads to poor relationship quality because it doesn't feel so good when you're ready to move forward, but you feel like your partner is waiting for something. This is associated with negative outcomes. And then the most interesting risk factor that I think young people should know about is that explicitly planning to use cohabitation to test the relationship is associated with poor relationship outcomes. And that's really important to know because I think a lot of people think of cohabitation as the perfect test for partnership or marriage.
It sounds like you're almost covering all the bases, I guess, other than being engaged or full-on ready to get married, that cohabitating and is not a good idea.
Well, you bring up a good point. We do know that being engaged first can be a protective factor, so couples who are engaged when they move in together tend not to suffer these negative outcomes. But I think it's also possible for couples who aren't engaged but who can be clear and open and mutual in their commitment to move in together and say, this is where we are in our relationship. We agree on this. Let's keep talking about this as we move along so that it's not seen as a test, it's seen as a commitment. And it may be a commitment that happens before engagement, but it's still a mutual, shared, explicit commitment. We know that those conditions are less likely to have negative outcomes.
I'm talking to Dr. Meg Jay, a clinical psychologist at the University of Virginia. She's the author of the book, The Defining Decade, Why Your 20s Matter and How to Make the Most of Them Now. So tell me, do men and women view cohabitation in a different way, and is it a better deal for one rather than the other?
Oh, I don't know about a better deal, but I do know studies that have measured how men and women talk about cohabitation show that women are more likely, on average, to see it as a step forward, a step closer to engagement or partnership or marriage, whereas men are more likely to report seeing it as a way to almost put off making a real commitment and to test drive the relationship. So it is common for men and women to have different ideas about why they're moving in together, and these often aren't discussed. And so they sort of live in the apartment without anyone really talking about them clearly.
So is your view that a couple in general is better off not making this move until they're officially married?
No, I wouldn't say that's my black and white view. I would say that I've said in the New York Times article, I'm not for or against cohabitation, but I am for young adults or adults of any age knowing the research behind it, knowing under what conditions it's more likely to lead to successful relationships and under what conditions it can really undermine the relationship that you're trying to build.
You know, if you're a woman and you're living with a man who you're hoping to marry one day, is it a good idea to set some kind of a schedule and insist on certain steps being taken at certain points?
I don't know that that's the answer. I think, again, it comes back to couples sitting down and talking and saying, what does this mean that we're doing this? What is our plan? Where might we like to be 6 months from now or 2 years from now? How long do we plan on cohabitating, and where are we hoping this will go? I think if everybody's in agreement about where they want it to go, then everybody can be happy. But sometimes couples aren't in agreement, and often couples don't even know they're not in agreement, because cohabitation can be such a quick or seemingly minor decision that couples just don't talk about it.
And the next thing you know, half your life has slipped right past you. So let's talk about our 20s. Let's look back.
Okay.
Let's look back to our 20s, Ashley. So I guess the thing about the 20s, for some people, you call it the defining decade, but you know, for some people it can be a productive time, but you know, for many people it is a time where they might be just kind of getting their head straight on things.
Right.
Why do you call it the defining decade?
I call it the defining decade because our 20s are the critical period of adult development. We know that 80% of life's most defining moments take place by age 35, even though the defining moments that happen in the 20s, we don't recognize them as being defining until we're out of our 20s. We know 70% of lifetime wage growth happens in the first 10 years of a career. More than half of us are married or dating or living with our partner by age 30. Our personalities change more in our 20s than any time before or after. Fertility peaks, and even our brains cap off their last growth spurt in our 20-something years. So this is a decade when the things that we do and the things we don't do are going to have an enormous impact on our lives, even though our lives haven't been completely decided yet.
But you know, you see young people nowadays, and they're taking their time doing everything. They may spend at least half their 20s hanging out with friends, maybe working a job that's less than fulfilling. How does that impact the rest of their life? Do you view that as a major societal problem?
I think there's a misunderstanding amongst 20-somethings, and again, it goes back to my attitude about cohabitation, and that is educate yourself. I think there's a misunderstanding about the 20s, and that is that idea that 30 is the new 20, that if I start my career at 30 and I get serious about relationships at 30 and I start to think about family at 30, then I still have plenty of time to do everything, and that just isn't true. Couples who start all of these tasks in their 30s often find that life isn't adding up, and it's very sad to see that they feel like they can't have the careers and the relationships and the families that they want.
Well, you know, on the flip side, some would say that, look, if you come out of the box and try to establish your life at such an early age, you might not really even know exactly what you want.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, there's a lot that can happen between 20 and 30. We're definitely past the days where people are, the average age of marriage is 21 and people are having their first child at 22. You know, we're way past that. But I think the important part is helping 20-somethings navigate what happens between 20 and 30, because it's definitely not nothing. You know, definitely does matter a whole heck of a lot. And so I think there's a lot in between starting at 20 and starting at 30, and a lot of that it's about educating yourself about your own development.
So one last thing. You're a parent and you've got a 22-year-old kid, and he's living in your basement, and he seems to be enjoying life, hanging out with his friends or her friends. What is it that you would say or do when it comes to your child to make them grasp these things that you're saying here?
Right. Well, they could read my book. That'd be great. But other things they could do. If you have a child living at home, I mean, it can make some economic sense, but I think there needs to be a plan and a clear sense of what's the financial arrangement, what is this person contributing, they should be working or clearly looking for work, because work is not easy to find right now. But there needs to be a clear plan of how this is going to transition into this young adult being on his or her own, because living at home with parents, it might kind of feel good for that kid in the basement, but trust me, as a therapist for 20-somethings, they don't really like it all that much either, and more parents are vocal about the fact that it's not working so great for them either.
Dr. Meg Jay, she's a clinical psychologist at the University of Virginia, and check out her book. It's called The Defining Decade, Why Your 20s Matter, and How to Make the Most of Them Right Now. Dr. Jay, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me.